now, Icon Art Radio.
Bill Teeple with Icon Art Radio with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, and we have our guest of last week back today, John Stimson. You were about to say something about the book that's in your hand that we didn't get to address last week. Would you like to?
Yes, I've been holding it in my hands for a week now, and I've just been itching to talk.
Yeah, it's a little damp.
Yes. The book is called The Gentle Art of Making Enemies. It has a quite a provocative title. It's by Whistler, the painter, and it's his very tongue-in-cheek response to a lot of attempts in his lifetime to try to define art, to try to define him, to try to ridicule him. His art impulse, as you know, was rather groundbreaking at the time. He was in among the impressionists and people who did shocking things back in the late 1800s, rattling the notions of a very complacent Victorian art world.
Well, let me just say that last week we got talking about the nature of beauty and how art and beauty are a process, and oh boy, I'm spacing out. Go ahead. Keep going.
The reason that I bring this up is a continuation of last week's thought that art is an entity. Art can be perceived as a consciousness, as an entity that is, in a sense, whole, complete in itself, and yet it is shared by everybody. And that an artist, as a human being, as a person who sublimates his or her ego to that persona of art. And art has personal attributes that you could say that resemble a human personality. Feisty in a way, and very much not liking to be limited or confined or defined in any way. Very much needing the capricious, playful freedom that so many of us people desire. But by sublimating a human ego to the persona of art, to say, okay, I, John Stimson, am not going to be John Stimson for a while. I am going to put on the mantle, as it were, of art. And therefore, I can do anything that impulse guides me to do without being egotistical, because it's not any of my, John Stimson's, responsibility.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because one of the paradoxes of artistic activity is that sort of question of ego, because it takes ego and will and intent to begin a work. And then it requires the total dissolution of those things to actually create the work.
The same impulse guides people into spirituality. Right. I want to perceive God. Mm-hmm. I am brash and egotistical enough that I want to shake hands with God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any person who purports to have no ego about that,
right,
disqualifies himself immediately.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, can you get back to how you started with Whistler? You reached a point in art history where Whistler was perceiving what was going on at the time with the Impressionists. So, what was his place in this whole
story? His place in this was to take on entirely the persona of art, with a capital A or whatever, and to use that as a theatrical way of demonstrating that a human being could be an artist through and through, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and not merely in the studio. And this manifested itself in actual lawsuits where people tried to denigrate Whistler and his art, and in doing so they essentially created libel, and Whistler himself pursued the legal avenues open to him, and he won a court case based on his own testimony, and he was awarded one farthing in damages. A farthing is a quarter of a cent. It was kind of a, it was itself a very wry comment on the part of the judge, but this book, The Gentle Art of Making Enemies, highly recommended, by the way. It's been printed many times. What it does is to outline, in terms of letters written back and forth, fired back and forth, I would say, it outlines the persona of this unquenchable persona entity known as art.
Now, what's interesting to me about that whole story is just when you were telling the story about the court case and the farthing and the quarter of a cent, we all smiled and laughed. And to me, that is the beauty of the theatricality of life.
Exactly.
And so I would add that to my picture of what art is. Art has to do with an intention, possibly to create something beautiful, but it also is a participation in the theatricality of life as it goes on all the time. There are stories, and there are colors, and there are
myths,
forms, and there's dances, and everything else.
Yeah.
And that what I feel like as an artist is that I'm jumping into the mix, and I'm playing with it, and rearranging it, and doing something with it. And it sounds like Whistler really had fun with that.
Very much so. His reaction was against Victorian limitations of how one should live and how one should think and what one should do in order to be a proper subject of the crown, or whatever overbearing entity guides people in any mass society. Many of our reactions in the generation I grew up was a reaction against the 1950s conformity.
Yeah, yeah.
That's still playing itself out to the point where a lot of artists have completely turned themselves inside out and have become very conformist in being nonconformist. The reaction against the walls, any fences that people try to build around art, or for that matter around life itself, are and always will be the vigilant battle that art has to fight. Art essentially is not only represents the quality of life, it also represents the creative spirit, and without a creative avenue, without the chance for any individual to take an uncharted course into exploring art, beauty, life, anything, there is deadness. And conformity creates deadness.
Well, the old ways have to, I mean, everything is constantly changing, so there constantly has to be destruction for the next step of unfoldment to take place. So the artist is always at this cutting edge of this process of destruction and creation. Mm-hmm. And what's being created is new life, because it's kind of a crystallized death, and then that has to be swept out of the way so that life itself can rise up again.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the job that the artist is performing.
Very much like any, in my work as I did as a scientific illustrator, that was very much in evidence in the biological specimens that I was perceiving, is that there is this unquenchable burgeoning. It's always burgeoning. It's always trying to find a way around the obstacles that are placed in its path.
One of the, I mean, I was just thinking when you were talking about the creative and destructive impulses, an artist is comfortable with both of those. Maybe that's why an artist is so uncomfortable by tradition with maintenance.
Oh, yeah.
Eating on time, you know, cleaning your house, keeping your clothes clean, you know, all of that.
Anything and that's been done before.
That's just, you know, these tedious things that you kind of just have to do to keep life going. Mm-hmm. Traditionally are not appealing to artists.
Very much so. A friend of mine who Jim Weidel will remain nameless, Jim Weidel, he was so much of an artist that even when he was in school, he would never take the same route walking to and from school. He would always
That's not practical.
He would always try to do at least something different. He would turn around and walk backward for 10 steps, and then he would walk 3 times around the fire hydrant, and then he would cross the street and come back again, just to make sure, absolutely sure, that he was never doing the same thing exactly the same twice.
It's sort of the opposite of obsessive compulsive disorder.
Exactly. Well, in a way, it was an obsessive compulsive thing to do, but converse to the usual pattern of having to do everything the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The impulse, though, to do everything different. In a way, it's running away from the fact that you can never do anything the same twice. Even if you try to do in a scientific experiment exactly the same thing twice, just the fact that it is now and not then means it's different.
Right.
So to me, I like to feel the freedom to do something the same as I've done it before, or at least to intend to do it the same as I've done it before, because I know that there's no danger of falling into that. That is a matter of perception. If your perception is dull and it is worn down to the point where you have seen this before, well, then that is the problem.
Well, I've always been fond of series of the same piece again and again, because you're doing it again, but you're exploring more expanded values of it as you do it again. Because it just becomes fuller and fuller and richer, and more subtle detail or some angle on it can be explored.
And it underscores the fact that art is not about the finished product. That is to say, it's that the finished painting or drawing is only a shell. It's only a fossil that's left behind of the art process. Mm-hmm. And that if you do 2 drawings that are very, very much the same, that does not disqualify them from being individual art expressions. One was the first one, and the second one was the second one. And even if you could say that they look alike, the experience of doing the second drawing was the experience of doing the second drawing.
Yeah, this fits very nicely into my personal theory of art, which is that everything you do is primarily a preparation for the next thing that you do.
That's good, yeah. I forget which artist it was. Jasper Johns, perhaps? I think I'm getting this right. He defined the art process as merely taking an object and doing something to it, and then doing something else to it, and then doing something else to it. But it's always in the direction of building not merely one art object, but in terms of building a lifelong statement, a lifelong question, I would say, an ongoing question of what is art, what is beauty.
Well, the ultimate access to answers is in the proper framing of the question, not in the actual asking of the question.
Good point there. Good point there. Mm-hmm. And the beauty also, and this is of great spiritual comfort to the true artist, the great value of sublimating one's ego to the persona of art as an entity, is that even if this individual body dies, there's solace in the fact that some other person will carry that impulse of art. And if one truly identifies, if an artist truly identifies with the persona of art, then there's immortality. It's the...
Mm-hmm. The whole process, too, you know, that you're just describing of the ongoing, there's the first project and there's the second, mm-hmm. and everybody kind of, whether they're purposely doing a series or not mm-hmm. consciously a series, there's some building from the last piece. And in my mind, I see it kind of as a spiral where you're always spiraling back to something that came before. And even if it's a universal thing, like there's nothing new under the sun, mm-hmm. everything is original, but there's nothing new under the sun. So you have both of those things happening simultaneously. You're always giving birth to some completely unique thing, but at the same time, you're always dipping back into...
Yeah.
Like uh-huh. that, I watched a movie the other night, an old James Cagney movie, and it showed a statue at the beginning of the movie, and carved up beneath the statue was the sentence, "The past is prologue," which is, I think, part of the beauty of creating art, is you're not denying anything that was already created in the past. It's not stagnant at all. It's always giving new... catalyst for something completely different.
Yes. Almost the definition of anything burgeoning or blossoming is that it's built on last year's stem. Mm-hmm.
Or last century's.
Last century, yes, you know? Yes. Yeah. The persona of art is very much like the persona of people. We like to have a history. We like to have an identity that is based on what we have lived. It's good to be not too locked into that, but it is a comfort to say, oh yes, I came from this place, and that gives me an idea of perhaps where I'm going or where I would like to go. Mm-hmm. So definitely, even the more artists try to get away from the history of art in terms of their representations, the more closely they adhere to it. In a sense, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
It's interesting also to consider the advantage of an artist in a mythical environment, in a very archaic culture where historicity isn't the definition of time, but where each year is a recreation of the sacred original year.
It's the right,
and so each creative act is freed of that burden of being original. It doesn't need to be something you've never seen before. And it's just a celebration of, you know, what the gods have already been doing and do mm-hmm. over and over again.
And yet I don't see there any kind of repetitiveness, because the freshness was in the perception.
Right. Right.
The freshness is in the perception. Yes, there have been winters and springs and summers before, and yet this is the one that is here now.
Yeah.
And it's to be enjoyed. It's a gift that is to be enjoyed now, and if it's not enjoyed now, it's wasted.
And even every day within a season. I went through mm-hmm. this one particular year where I made a vow that I was going to go for a walk at exactly the same mm-hmm. time. This was the opposite of the Jim Weidel thing, because I decided I was going to take exactly the same walk every single day at exactly the same time all through the entire four seasons. Mm-hmm. And what struck me shortly after beginning this project was how extraordinarily different every single day was at exactly the same time. And that was the ongoing artistry of creation, that had different light quality feeling and everything. It was marvelous how...
But what was really different was not necessarily the nature surrounding you, but you yourself.
I think it was both actually. Yeah, because there was... It was not just my mood that was different. It was some very specific outer
thing. Well, there's a squirrel running up the tree this time, and the next time there's two squirrels running down the tree, and one of them is black. What does that say?
I'm sure you've seen the movie Groundhog Day, where the fella has to relive the same day over and over again. And yet what changes, ultimately, is himself.
Yeah.
And that is what liberates him ultimately. It liberates him from living the same day over and over again. Mm. It's a metaphor. It's the internal change that creates the fundamental change that makes life new from one moment to the next.
And the effect of that exercise for me after that year was I actually fell in love with weather.
Oh, absolutely.
Even the coldest winter days, I was like, man, I used to stay in on days like this. What was I missing out on? Because there was such beauty out there.
Well, the very idea that we call it weather, that we've abstracted it and given it a name, and what are we actually referring to when we say weather?
Oh, well,
we're talking
and even
about
worse.
The world.
Yeah, and even worse than that, to say it.
Yeah.
It is snowing. It is raining.
Right.
It was a dark and stormy night.
Yeah. Well, of course, the French don't. They say right. It rains.
It rains. Yeah.
Which but is no, a little better.
But it.
Yeah, still it. There's still a...
Il. Yeah. Il pleut. Mm-hmm.
Of course, you could say he rains.
That, in certain cultures, they do that.
Yeah.
But it is better to say rain is falling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am in rain.
That's
I am raining. Yeah. It's like when the page snow. Came running into the throne room and said, "Hail, O King!" And the king replied, "I can't. I'm busy raining."
Oh. Snow
that's
use.
That's a total John Stimson.
Snow use. Snow use. Mm-hmm. Yes. But back to our very erratic subject here. The newness of the moment is ultimately is the responsibility of the artist because to be as Whistler was an artist full time, meaning not just 8 hours a day but 24 hours a day, to be an artist full time means to take the responsibility of seeing the newness from one moment to the next, every moment. Very much the same as being a true spiritualist, to see that the now, the sensation of being here now is an eternal rather than a temporal reality. And to be fully present means essentially to not to grasp onto any particle of time at all, but to embrace the fullness of now. And for an artist, that includes not just a state of being, but a state of perceiving. That's the extension of a state of being, is a state of perceiving, is to see and to witness the newness of every now.
So they've used that expression, beginner's mind. Mm-hmm. It's good to work from beginner's mind. Mm-hmm. And probably that's why artists have been associated with children or childlike spirits.
Agnes
because
yeah.
It's like, you know, that kind of, a child wakes up in the morning and it's a whole new day and everything, mm-hmm. even, you know, to a young child, even his own hand mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. completely new. Like, what is this thing? And that's important for an artist to be able to access yeah. that kind of state of mind too.
Agnes Martin in that Icon video it was talking about empty mind.
Mm-hmm.
A mind that is free of any of the catalog of experiences that would recognize patterns and say, oh, I've lived this before.
Free of history.
Free of history, exactly. And it can be said to be a state of simplicity or even foolishness, where there's a complete sense of disembodied intention, where there isn't even a sense of, oh, this is who I am and this is what I do. It is simply the experience of, this is what is. And that results in a very happy state of art, because the happy state of art is one that rediscovers beauty at every moment and expresses beauty at every moment. Now, taking that to an extension, you could say that the impulse of beauty in one who is not fully aware, is that impulse of art is felt and then sort of lost. And so you're trying to grope for that. And that's where technique is lost. That's why a person would create a painting, even with the best of intentions, a painting that would fail, is that in losing the moment, one has lost the impulse.
And then it just becomes pressure, like, exactly. Got to finish this painting.
Right. But then the person who sees that failure, if that person is truly in the moment, would say, wow, what a beautiful failure. Right? And so it distills down to as many people as possible being present fully in the moment, because then the artist is creating every moment and doesn't lose that thread, and then the viewers are in the moment and they bring what they can to perceive the art.
And which seems to be the product of the art process, bringing everyone into the now.
Mm-hmm. There's a woman who wrote a book called Improv Life. Mm. And it isn't just anything goes, because she's taking an improv theater. You're always listening and watching everybody else and responding mm-hmm. to that. And it's a beautiful book, actually, that we need to do more of that in our everyday life, and then life becomes art.
Yeah. Art is definitely always a response to something. It's never in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And it's always the response that results in its own propagation, its own well-being.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.